Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hits.
I suppose the big story in the news is the AstraZeneca vaccine, and according to the state advisors, the AstraZeneca vaccine should not be given to older people under the age, and only to those under the age, or those under the age of 60, including patients that have medical conditions but very high or high risk of severe COVID-19 disease. This, according to the state advisors on immunisation, any authorised vaccine, including AstraZeneca, is recommended for those aged 60 years and older, according to the National Immunisation Advisory Committee. NIAC says a second dose should not be given to anyone who's developed unusual blood clots with low platelets after the first dose. Those aged 60 and older should receive their second dose 12 weeks later as scheduled, as should under 60s with a very high risk or a high risk of a medical condition. Those under 60 with a very high risk or high risk condition will have an interval between their doses extended to 16 weeks to allow for further assessment of the benefits and the risks of the vaccine. Well, look, let's get to the bottom of this and find out exactly what is going on. And to find out a little bit more about it is Professor of Immunology, and should I say, these words are getting longer, Immune Virology at the University of College of Cork, Liam Fanning. Sorry, Liam, I do apologise. I got flummoxed in my words.
It's all right. No bother.
The words epidemiology, immunology, virology, all these ologies are just coming at me over the last year or so, and that one just grabbed me there. It's immune virology. So you're studying both, I assume.
So, yeah, my research background would be a combination of both immunology and virology. That kind of encompasses the whole lot of it.
Okay, so look, where are we going? I mean, we suspended the vaccine going back 3 weeks ago because of the fear, I suppose, that there was a connection between blood clots and the blood clots that were reported, particularly around Europe, and the vaccine. Now, we didn't have a direct connection. It was a correlation, and there can be a lot of correlations, but make very little sense to us sometimes. But has that changed now? And do we have a direct connection? I know there was a suggestion by Luke O'Neill that there may be something genetic in people that is causing this to happen. But is there a direct connection now between the vaccines and these very few, and let's be clear, very few instances of blood clots?
So what appears to be coming out, and the speed at which this research has been done is exceeding anything that was ever done in the past. So there are two pieces of information that we know. First of all, that the antibodies that we produce against the main protein that's in the AstraZeneca vaccine or the J&J vaccine or the mRNA vaccine, the spike protein, do not react with platelets, right? They don't cross-react in a kind of a off-target way. But what we have, there's a lovely paper published in the New England Journal of Medicine which suggests that perhaps in some individuals who have a particular makeup, and what that is ill-defined, that maybe their platelets get infected by the adenovirus, the AstraZeneca vaccine, and that somehow this turns on an autoimmune response and we make antibodies against the protein that we wouldn't otherwise make. Like, immunology is a very discreet, you know, tool. We don't see ourselves as foreign, obviously, and therefore we don't make antibodies against those proteins ordinarily. But in autoimmune disease, that switch is flipped, and sometimes we actually turn against ourselves. And that's what appears to be happening in some of these. They're making an antibody against the protein, which is called platelet factor 4, or PF4 for short. Mm-hmm. And it appears that if antibodies bind to that, then that this is somehow precipitating a clot which is accompanied with a low platelet population. And these are small little cells that are critical to clotting.
And have we identified what is different about the Oxford vaccine or the AstraZeneca vaccine in comparison to the Pfizer, the Moderna and the other vaccines, which don't seem to be causing this problem? Well, from what we know of so far.
From what we know of, you're quite correct. And so there are two questions that will be intriguing scientists at the moment. One will be, is it some quirk of a combination of the adenovirus, this other chimpanzee adenovirus backbone? They use the kind of a chimpanzee virus to package the genetic material to make the spike protein. Is there some particular combination of that in individuals, in a small group of individuals, which as a result of their genetic profile and perhaps maybe their immune status, that it triggers this self to turn on itself and produce this antibody, which leads to these very unusual clots?
I mean, so far they have suggested that the amount of people this will affect will be 1 to 5 in a million people. Now, in saying that, that's a really small number of people. But in saying that as well, that's one to five too many, because we don't want to see anybody die, because indeed a blood clot can kill you. You know, in the extreme circumstances, it can kill you. And it depends, of course, where you get the blood clot. And I suppose that's why the advice is with younger people, particularly under the age of 30, the chance of you dying of COVID-19 under the age of 30 are practically nil. So to give you a vaccine that might put you at risk would be pointless and silly. I mean, because it's putting you more at risk than you would be from COVID-19. But we can understand why we're still advising it for those over the age of 65 who are much more at risk of COVID-19. Is that the case?
That is the case. So it's a balance between, and this is the, we saw...
It's a bit of a Hobson's choice, is it, I suppose?
It is, absolutely. So, you know, they're the main goal, and we've seen with the change in the vaccine rollout program, is that they've gone down in the decades as opposed to kind of what they were doing by profession and all that kind of stuff. And this is about the prime directive is to protect life. And to avoid death. And therefore, that's why I think they've gone with the decision. The 60 to 70-year-olds are still should be given AstraZeneca. And the younger people, you know, they're less likely to end up critical care. Now, they still might get long COVID, but nonetheless, they're not likely to die. So that's the kind of Hobson's choice, as you said, that they're basically
Professor, would we be doing this if we went back in time to other vaccines that we produced? And by the way, I'm very pro-vaccine and always have been on the show. But if we went back to other vaccines like HPV or, you know, the childhood vaccines, childhood immunizations, if we had a vaccine, even with swine flu, which we took off the market many years ago, because, of course, in some countries, it was bizarre that it was only in some countries it seemed to affect a small amount of people with narcolepsy.
That's correct.
Yeah, and it was removed from the market. So if we had a situation where a vaccine was... we believe creating a bit of a risk factor, we would normally just take it off the market until we establish that it's safe again to do so. Why do you think in this instance we're not taking it off the market? Or do you believe maybe we're being overcautious and you think it's a lot safer than people are making it out to be, because maybe we're doing more analysis than we've ever done of a vaccine?
2 points. Your latter point is quite correct. We're doing more analysis. There's never been more public awareness of a vaccine program, I think, in the entirety of humanity. And secondly, the risk, okay, of clot, we'll say, of death is, I think Karina Butler said, 1 in 1 million yesterday. And the rate of, we'll say, clot events is somewhere between 4 to 10 in a million
A
million doses for their first dose. So it's about risk assessment. And many individuals are, you know, female individuals are on the pill. And there's a risk of a clot on the pill, which is far exceeds the, we'll
absolutely.
Say, the current.
Absolutely. You know, we talked about this outside. Actually, I was talking to my producer about this outside, and she mentioned that as well, about the pill and deep bone thrombosis and stuff like that as well, you know, in relation to the contraceptive pill. But the difference is, and people will say to you, I have a choice to take the pill. I don't really have a choice to take this vaccine. Yes, it's not mandatory. I get that. But we are being told, and the general public are being told by the government, there will be extra freedoms for those who take the vaccine. So people feel coerced into taking it. And when we feel coerced into taking something, we want to make sure it's safe before we do. So I suppose from that point of view, there's a bit of a difference, isn't there?
There is an absolute difference. I suppose the Department of Health would take issue with the language of coerced, but there is an element.
Well, Professor, I don't want to have an argument with you about it, but I mean, when a government and when the state, you know, and the Taoiseach of the country and his second in command make a statement like there will be freedoms for those who take it, that essentially is coercing people that you're not going to have the same life as everybody else unless you take a vaccine of some description. So that is coercion.
That is correct, in that they are leaving the choice to you, but your choices have consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And we have determined that those consequences will be perhaps you can't go into the pub, or perhaps you can't go on a flight or to the cinema. So, freely given informed consent is what is, you know, is usually required when people take a medicine. And in this particular case, it comes with a caveat that if you make a free choice not to have this vaccine, in the short term, there will be consequences that you know, some airlines may not take you, let you travel, or you may not be able to take the train, or even, you know, in some instances...
You will be treated differently somewhat. And by the way, that's all well and good for the betterment of mankind, et cetera, and for the health of the general population, and I'm all for that, and that's great. But in saying that, if we are going to go down that road, we have to make sure, of course, that something is safe. And what's happened now at the moment, of course, we haven't heard much about Pfizer, Moderna or the other vaccines, thankfully. But with this particular vaccine, there's been nothing but news about it over the last two or three months. So this, in turn, is creating this vaccine cautiousness. And by the way, it's fueling the conspiracy theorists.
It is, absolutely. And I suppose this is a bit like the law of unintended consequences, where we have, where, you know, there's a risk-averse approach to being taken to the delivery of the vaccine rollout. And the consequences of that are, A, it gives opportunity for people to start, we'll say, spreading misinformation.
Of
and
course.
B, for those that are uncertain, to become even more uncertain, nervous, and maybe questioning the information that's coming from official sources to say, is this really the full story?
Yeah, well, you told us this last week, but you're telling us this week.
Absolutely.
And I heard an anecdotal story yesterday of a young man who died of a heart attack in his early 40s. And the story was, it was put up on Facebook, he had the AstraZeneca virus the day before. Now, let's be clear about this. People, thousands of people have heart attacks every single day of the week, right? And
correct.
The possibility of somebody having a vaccine and having a heart attack the next day or that night, I mean, it's not beyond the realms of possibility. It'll happen on a daily basis, most likely, because 90 people die every day. If we've already vaccinated 1 million people with the first dose, that's a fifth of the population. So out of a fifth of 90, roughly about, 15 to 20 people, you know, who will get ill or who will die will have had the vaccine the day before. So what I'm saying is we can't correlate like that. But the problem is, for you guys and for the government, people are going to correlate.
Yeah, no, look, vaccines are wonderful. I'm a very strong advocate of vaccines. As soon as vaccines became available for HPV and hepatitis B and hepatitis A, my children were marched up to the GP and they were all shot with everything, the boys included. It cost me a small fortune, but it was absolutely worth it. I'm a full, fervent believer in the value of vaccines for protecting individuals against
disease. Absolutely, they've saved billions of lives around the world in the last 50 years.
I mean, hepatitis B, polio, the whole lot, you know, HPV,
smallpox gone.
Surgical checks, the whole lot. We've seen the damage it can do if people, end up with the consequences of viral infections.
And more recently, of course, many women in this country die needlessly of cervical cancer. And we've seen the great results of that.
That's different to a vaccine-related issue, but, because they were, in the main, too old to have been, we'll say, to kind of, the women
the
of Ireland who have received the human papilloma virus vaccine, they're well protected, still should obviously have their smear test as appropriate, but, they're well protected. And it just shows you the value of a good, coherent message. But even there, with the human papilloma virus rollout, there was massive dips down to a point where there was only maybe 50, 60% of eligible individuals.
And again, that was because of Facebook. And I know the HSE, the Department of Health, described the individuals who were spreading those videos at the time 3 years ago as health terrorists. Because, of course, they were spreading this misinformation that it was affecting teenage girls.
I'm not quite sure how helpful emotive language like that is in the round, because actually it just polarizes opinion even further. Because
maybe.
You have to differentiate between genuine concern and uncertainty as opposed to someone kind of... malevolently spreading mistruths.
Okay, well, I tell you what, for our listeners today, people who are at home that maybe have had the first dose of AstraZeneca already, many have. It's the second most popular vaccine in this country. It is the second most popular vaccine in this country. So for those who had the first dose of the AstraZeneca and maybe are worried about a blood clot festering, what would you say to those to alleviate those concerns?
Okay, there's two things I'd say. First of all, they get on to their caregiver, and that is it their nurse in the practice or their GP in the practice, and they have a conversation. What people need is time to absorb the information and the relative risk. The vaccine rollout is a rollout, and that implies almost conveyor belt. So, but there is time given for people. But some people might just need more. And now that they've had one shot and they hear all this uncertainty, stop, start. It's very worrying for them. And that worry has to be given the credence it's due, and the time has to be taken to talk to these individuals. And we'll say you're a 62-year-old man and you're probably maybe on hypertension tablets or blood pressure tablets, or you're maybe a little bit overweight and you're pre-diabetic. This vaccine will prevent you getting COVID, and your chances of having unfortunate developments as a result of kind of the complications of COVID are much higher than any of the complications associated with this vaccine. But we do have choices, and we will have more choices. The RNA vaccines have been proven to be very effective. There's a new vaccine going to be probably approved in third quarter this year from France, Valneva, I think, V-A-L-N-E-V-A. And it is showing wonderful protection with respect to the amount of antibodies that is produced. It's an inactivated virus.
And final couple of questions, right? Firstly, in relation to the vaccine itself, we're hearing a lot about people in quarantine and stuff like that, and even though they've been vaccinated, and even Simon Harris himself said this morning he doesn't believe it's logical to put people into quarantine, mandatory quarantine, if they've been vaccinated and if they have a negative test. The vaccination, what are the results so far? when it comes to people who are asymptomatic, i.e. they have had the vaccine, we're saying they can still get the virus, but they will be asymptomatic, most likely. So the viral load would be quite low, I imagine, if they do have it. So what is the possibility of those people spreading it? You know, if they've already had the vaccine, or if two people have the vaccine, what's the problem with those people meeting? I mean, why are we so cautious about this, moving forward with this?
Okay, well, let me sort of split it into two things. One, we'll deal with the RNA vaccines, first of all. The RNA vaccines have shown to be very effective against nearly all variants. And what you have is that they're very effective against the wild-type variant, in other words, the original virus, and we'll say the British strain, the B117. And then you have a relative quantitative difference in the amount of capacity to neutralize this virus, but they're still effective. So it's like, say, you know, I'll be satisfied with 20 Smarties, but I'll still kind of have a hit of chocolate with 10. Do you know what I mean? So it's still effective as a vaccine product. The AstraZeneca one has been proven to be quite effective, except for the South African variant. I think the efficacy was only around 10%. So, you know, if somebody was traveling from South Africa and had the AstraZeneca vaccine, perhaps you might want them to have a PCR test before they leave, and then home quarantine, or else quarantine in the hotels and have a test at 5 days.
Because, so you're saying even if somebody is vaccinated, even if they have a negative test, you believe they still should be quarantined?
No, I do not.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
No,
all
I do
right,
not.
Okay.
No.
Okay, no. I'm sorry, I misunderstood what you said, sorry.
No, well, this is about the nuances of what vaccine people got. And this is about, you know, how's the world going to...
Okay, so you would agree with Simon Harrison, you would believe that that would be illogical to continue to do that, to keep people in quarantine and being vaccinated.
And you see, what's key here is history of the patient travel. So if they've got an AstraZeneca vaccine, and if it's from a part of the world where that doesn't give any coverage, well, then you'd have to say, well, perhaps, you know, you're not as covered as you might think you are. And a PCR test would be the way to sort that out, or a couple of PCR tests would be the way to sort that out.
And finally, sorry, I know you're running out of time, but by the way, this news just coming in, literally, the New York Times is now reporting, and you probably haven't read this, and maybe I can get your immediate reaction to it. The US is now calling for a pause on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine after clotting cases. The Food and Drug Administration and Center for Disease Control will stop using the vaccine at federal sites and urge states to do so while they examine safety issues.
So the fascinating thing about this is the two, the J&J and the AstraZeneca, both use vector-like molecules to get the vaccine into individuals. And maybe there's an element of the science we don't understand with respect to adenoviruses and the...
Is this very concerning now that we now have two vaccines that one is, we're saying now we should really only use for 65, over 65-year-olds because we think it might be more of a risk to use it under the age of 65. And now we have the other main vaccine, which I mentioned a minute ago, I didn't think there was a concern about, news just in, obviously, from the US, that they're now pausing that one as well, saying that there's also a risk of blood clots.
Well, you see, an instance with one vaccine is a kind of an interesting and very interesting story. Two vaccines of a similar kind, given the same story, the message is going to go, it is going to be received by the population. These adenovirus type vaccines have a complication with them. Now, it still might be low per vaccine, but I reckon what this will lead to is a whole branch of science understanding these vectors and how they interact with the clotting system, and can they be fine-tuned to take this away from them.
Okay, finally, in relation to the vaccine, if it's a case, and if it turns out that there is some direct link to blood clotting from both of these vaccines now, I mean, we haven't heard anything from Moderna yet, thankfully, right? But from both these vaccines, would it not be a case of somebody, and I read an article recently, I can't remember where it was, that the idea that we're actually vaccinating people under the age of 65 is probably unnecessary?
It's about risk of illness, long COVID and serious illness and death, right? So the further down you go, you know yourself, the data is, you know,
the data clearly shows us, and I know Professor John Lee was on with us last week, and he said, and I'm quoting him, that under the age of 60, he said you were more likely to die from influenza. We never insisted that people under 65 got vaccinated for influenza.
No, you're quite correct in that. So I think, look, we have options. We have the RNA vaccines. So maybe it's, you know, beginning to time to have a discussion before we're at that kind of brick wall and saying, you know, we need to have a discussion about should we kind of switch over like the Israelis to just using the RNA vaccines. You know, they've vaccinated, I haven't stayed up with the data, but they're close on nearly 70% of their population have had certainly one dose, if not close on two doses. And their data has shown that the RNA vaccines give massive protection against symptomatic disease, asymptomatic disease, and are beginning to show reductions in transmission as a result of the immune response to these vaccines.
And the final questions for you in relation to, I suppose, the other theory out there by organisations like the ISAG, that they are still pushing for zero COVID at this late stage where many people believe the horse is already bolted and the virus is already in our midst. It's going to be here probably for the next 20 years. We don't know. Do you believe that's still an option or a good idea?
So I think we will achieve the goal of having COVID a manageable infection within Ireland through a combination of public health measures and vaccination. No one measure in itself is going to, and quarantining as well, sorry, let me throw that now, has been come into it. And I think we will ultimately end up having a virus that's seasonal and we'll be, you know.
Do you think the zero COVID idea is a fantasy?
Well, I think even zero COVID, Isaac, and I know a lot of those individuals, fine colleagues, they will say zero is not zero. There's a bit of a misnomer in a calling.
Well, they talk
zero
about
COVID.
5 to 10 cases
they
per
do,
day.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. But per day in the country, and they're calling that zero. But that zero is, sorry, that is backed up by forensic public health to do what they do in the likes of Brisbane and shut down a whole area for 2 or 3 days and they identify everybody who's been in contact
with
very,
it. Very different. There's a lot of variables in relation to Australia and New Zealand and the Oceania
Correct.
Region. By the way, the whole region of Oceania, they've had very low case numbers, but there are many variables in that, including age, population, climate and other variables too, and land borders.
And we an opportunity to be like that last June when we could have brought in the airport quarantine system.
Okay, so you think we're past that point anyway?
We're not going to go into kind of like, we'll say 2K lockdown like we had at the very beginning of the pandemic with those kind of, the population won't say, the population are jaded, the collateral damage in the youth, mental health, all the usual stuff that's kind of given, and they should be given real credence with respect to kind of support that are needed after this. Like, you know, we have had kids lost life experience, adults, people can't even have an even chance to grieve yet with their friends and family.
Okay, and that was going to bring me to my very last question. Sorry, just throw one more at you. I'm sure you've watched the scenes in Britain with people enjoying themselves out. Very few people wearing masks, even sitting outside. Thousands of people last night enjoying a pint, including Boris Johnson. Does that, when you see scenes like that, does that excite you somewhat or does it concern you?
So I'm dying for a pint of Guinness. It gives me great hope to deliver a pint of Guinness. And tell you why.
I'm dying for a holiday. You can stick the vaccine in my eye if I can go on holidays.
Antigen testing is part of the armory to keep this under a careful watch. We need a surveillance on this a lot. And, you know, serial testing with the antigen tests, you overcome some of the weaknesses of the antigen test. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So they're, you know, I see, yes, and I think some people will be a bit reticent maybe coming into next winter to drop the mask. I think that we still have, you know, some people, I was in Beijing actually in October 2019, just as this was beginning to move into the human population. That's what we know now. And it was October time. People were wearing masks all the time. And what they had a philosophy, as far as I understood it, is by wearing the mask, they were protecting others. But there was an element of protecting themselves about picking up the fact. And we've seen this year, there was no flu this year in Ireland. Now, that was partly due to the fact
that... With the greatest respect, I don't believe that. The HSE put out figures and said they had not one case of the flu.
Well, there was no laboratory diagnosed case.
Well, there was.
I
can tell you there was, because we have a mutual friend who has CF, and she was in hospital with the flu in January,
okay,
I think it was.
Correct.
And she was diagnosed with the flu. So I don't know where the HSC got that. Or December, should I say. So I don't know where the HSC got
well,
that.
There was very little flu in Ireland last year. And lots of RNA, lots of viral infections, which people give sinusitis and all that, didn't get them because it wasn't seeded into the country. Because we don't make our own flu virus, ordinarily. You know, I mean,
it comes from the southern hemisphere, isn't
exactly,
it?
Yeah. Exactly, exactly. It shuttles between the northern and southern hemisphere and stays around the equator all year round. So it kind of moves up and down with the temperature profile of the globe.
Mm. All right, well, look, thank you very much indeed. Very interesting.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you very much indeed. Professor of Immune Virology at University College Cork, that is Liam Fanning. And so I suppose the point he's making is that under the age of 65, I suppose the risk at the moment of the vaccine probably outweighs the risk of COVID-19, is the point that he's making in some senses. In other words, that because you're not at much risk under the age of 65 of dying of COVID-19, if you indeed contract it and get symptoms, it's not worth the risk until we're sure in relation to the AstraZeneca vaccine. Now, I suppose the news coming in now makes even things more complicated, because we now have a situation where we have another vaccine, which is popular, Johnson & Johnson. And that vaccine now, according to the US, they're calling for a pause, because this one is used primarily in America at the moment with the Moderna, is being paused after they now have clotting cases as well. And now this, please don't let this scare you if you've already had, a vaccine, particularly the AstraZeneca. You've heard what he said. It's a really low number of people. I mean, it's kind of one in a million people. Four in ten may get a blood clot. May. So it's a really, really low number. If you're over the age of 65, there's more than four in ten people will die in a million of COVID-19 if you get it. All right? If you're under the age of 65, the numbers are probably lower. So what I'm saying to you is, at the moment, the right thing to do is to stick to the over 65s. Some countries are not doing that, by the way. They're giving choices to people. They're asking people if you want it or you don't want it. They're giving you a choice. If you've already had the first dose and you do have underlying conditions, they're going to wait 16 weeks to make sure that we analyse it and make sure that there's no direct connection and make sure that it's safe. I suppose that's what they're going to do. And I suppose the important point he makes is in relation to vaccines. That as much as there has been problems with vaccines in the past, and some have been taken off the market, and others have been, you know, paused while they examine an issue, there has never been a vaccine in human history that has been analysed and overanalysed as much as the vaccines for COVID-19. Because we're watching everything that's going on, and everybody is watching. Do you understand? I mean, everybody is watching it. People, the anti-vax people, are just waiting to pounce. And they're right, by the way. They are right to say that. Everybody is right to be cautious. It is your body. It is your health. And your health is your wealth, and your body is important. And it's absolutely 100% right that you're cautious. And that you're watching and listening to everybody, including experts and people who've studied virology, and including the government who are giving you the advice. And it's very difficult, I understand, for everybody listening. You're saying to yourself, who do I trust? Who do I trust anymore? Do I trust the media? I trust some of the media, I wouldn't trust all of it. Do I trust virologists? Some of them I trust, some of them I wouldn't. Some of them wouldn't trust mine and me dog. So it's really difficult, and I know it's really difficult. So all I'd say to you is try and listen to as much as you can and make up your own mind. That's probably the best way out of it.
Real people, real opinions, real talk radio. The multi-award-winning Niall Boylan Show. Classic hit.